Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Chof Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin at the Mishnah that you'll find at the bottom of Chof Zayin Omid Beis. So take note, three lines from the bottom of Chof Zayin Omid Beis. This Mishnah is a continuation of the idea of Nidrei Oinsim, Nidorim, concerning which you have circumstances that are beyond one's control. In this Mishnah, we will see a person threatened, either his life being threatened or his finances, his money, his property being threatened, and in order to deter the aggressor, he vows, and through the vow, the aggressor will be deterred from pursuing his lustful wishes. The question is, what status does a neder like that have? So now we look into the Mishnah. Noidrim, laharogin, laharomin, ulamuchsin. We look at Rashi, laharogin, shuhoireg al iske momon. This is a person that is prepared to murder in order to gain financially. Sheim bo lahargo, if you have a person who is threatening to kill you, and in order to save your life, you would have to part with your money, and you don't want to part with your money. Yochol lidor al zeh shehu truma. He can make a vow that will establish in the mind of the aggressor that the produce that he wants to steal is truma. And here is something that's very, very ironic, but we're apparently describing people that murder isn't a big deal to them, but to eat truma, if you're as a non-Kohen, which is a sin, that is a big deal. So we'll just work with that assumption that people are prepared, yes, to murder, but they wouldn't eat truma. So the Rashi continues, the Yoimar, and the victim would say, Neder ze'olai, im eino shel truma. He accepts upon himself a vow if these fruits are not truma. That means a person might say, I declare all the food of the world, all the produce of the world forbidden to me if these fruits are not truma. Now, so if you hear such a thing, it must be a person doesn't want to have all the produce of the world forbidden to him, so it must be that the fruits are really truma. That's the impression that the victim is trying to convey. Afalpi she'eino shel truma, even though the fruits are in fact not truma, he says this, kedei shelo yitlim, lefi she'yesh chiyuv misa lezu, ve'haneder muter, v'hainu nami nidrei oitzin. He won't take it because for a non-Kohen to eat truma, he would be chayev misa. Again, it's very ironic that to commit a murder, that he'd be willing to do, which is punishable by capital punishment. Misa of a czar eating truma is only death at the hands of heaven. But nevertheless, that's how these bandits perceive things. The next example was lecharomen. Rashi says shehu listim ba'al moshena horeg. He's a person that's not going to murder. He's simply a thief. So you can do the same thing and vow that the produce he wants to steal is truma, and Thereby, the owner saves his pros, because the thief isn't going to want to take truma. And the fact is that the fruits are really not truma, and he's not bound by the prohibition that was implied or that was stated in his vow. The next example, Rashi says, "Lemuchsin noitel meches hamelech." This is a tax collector, "Verotze lito peroiso bal korcho," and he wants to collect as tax this called this victim's fruits against his will. So now the Mishnah continues. We said that you can make a neder to these kind of people. What's the neder? Shehi truma. Afal pishenu truma. He would vow that the fruits that you want to steal from me, they're truma. It's not worth your taking it. Even though, in reality, they're not truma. Shehein shel beis hamelech. Afal pishenu shel beis hamelech. He might vow that, you know, the fruits that you take belong to the king. It's not worth your while stealing produce that belongs to the king. Even though, in reality, they don't belong to the king, the vow that he took upon himself will not get off the ground. That's an example of nidrei oinsin, nidorim, vows that are taken under extenuating circumstances. Beishamay omrim, bakol nodrim. As we go on in the Mishnah, take note of the structure. There are three machloikasim, three points of controversy between Beishamay and Beis Hillel. So Beishamay says, bakol nodrim. We continue at the top of Chofches, chutz mi b'shvua. As the Mishnah in the Reish describe a person vowing, a person can make any kind of vow in order to deter the aggressor, with the exception of a shivua, with the exception of an oath. Rashi gives an example at the top of Chof Chesamun Aleph, chutz mi b'shivua shelo yoma, a person should not say, yesu peros sheba'ola molai b'shivua im einon shel truma. Let the fruits of the world be forbidden to me as an oath if they are not truma. The explanation for this you can see in the Ran, because a shivua is something that's very severe. You don't play around with the shivua, even if it's to serve your interest, as we are describing now. Nevertheless, you don't do that with a shivua, because regarding false oaths, the pasuk says lo yinakeh, that the Almighty does not cleanse, he doesn't forgive for false oaths. Ubeis Hillel omrim af b'shvua. Beis Hillel is more expansive, more lenient, and allows a person to foil the efforts of the aggressor even through shvua. Number two, Beis Shammai omrim lo yiftach loy b'neder. If the aggressor isn't demanding of you to make the vow, in other words, you tell the aggressor as he's about to steal your food, say, hey, those are truma. If he, the aggressor, doesn't insist on your vowing to that effect, then you cannot volunteer a neder to substantiate what you are claiming. You can initiate the neder even if the aggressor is not insisting upon it. Beis Shammai omrim bameh shehu madiro. Beis Shammai says that even when you are able to make the neder, for example, the aggressor demands of you making the neder, your neder must pattern that which the aggressor is seeking from you, seeking you to vow on. We'll explain that in a moment with an example provided in the Mishnah. When you take this vow, you can vow beyond that which the aggressor is expecting or insisting. Ketzad. Omar lo, the aggressor says, oh, you're claiming that the fruits are trua. Then, emor, I want you to vow, koinim ishti nenisli, that you prohibit benefiting from your wife if these fruits are not truma. V'omar, and the victim responds, Kolim ishti ubonai ne'enim li. He prohibits pleasure from his wife and children. Notice we dashed the line, bonai. This is a vow that he's volunteering. This aspect is not something that the aggressor demanded. Beis Hillel says that's okay. You can do that. You're adding, let's say, more gravity to the vow. Beis Shammai says, in such a case, ishto muteres ubonav asurim. The wife remains muteris because that is what the aggressor demanded from you under these extenuating circumstances. But the aggressor made no mention of the children. Now, you volunteered to vow concerning pleasure prohibition regarding your children. Well, that vow will take hold. So the children cannot benefit. Ubeis Hillel omrim elu v'elu mutarin. Beis Hillel, consistent with what they said, that you're allowed to take this vow, this deterrent vow, even regarding something that the aggressor did not insist on, and therefore no aspect of the vow takes hold. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a no say a topic heading, and we've written Eich Noidrim Lemuchsin. How is it that one is allowed to vow in order to deter a tax collector? Haredino de Mahusadino, the law of the land is recognized by Halacha as being the law. And we must be specific in this discussion, the law of the land with regard to tax collection. Taxes that are collected by the government benefit all of the citizenry. So you can't deprive the tax collector from that which is rightfully his. So why does the Mishnah suggest that, yes, you can vow in order to deflect the tax collector from collecting that which is due to him? The Gemara. The Omar Shmuel, regarding Noidrin Lemuchsin, Shmuel asks, Dino, or we ask in the name of Shmuel, or based on Shmuel, how can the Mishnah sanction Noidrin Lemuchsin, Dino de Machusa Dino? Shmuel teaches that the law of the land is recognized by Halacha. Therefore, how is it that we can sanction vowing to deter or deflect the tax collector who's collecting a government tax? So we have two answers. Omar of Chinuno, Omar of Kahana, Omar Shmuel, but Moiches She'ein Lo Kitzva. Here you're dealing with what's called foul play within tax collection. This is a tax collector that takes whatever he wants without any limits. So that's not sanctioned by Dina de Machusa. And therefore, you're entitled to vow, to defer, deflect him. Debei Rabbi Yanai Omar, b'moiches ha'imei me'elov. The second answer is that the tax collector mentioned here is a self-appointed tax collector. Namely, he's not a governmental official. He's not collecting based on the king's instructions. There's a point that you'll find in the Ran that is the basis of an extensive discussion regarding the concept of Dina de Mahusa Dina and when it applies or to whom does it apply. So let's look just briefly at the Ran just to expose our listeners to this issue. Just a few lines. In the Ran, the upper part of the narrow lines, as we explained, the Moichi Soimid Me'elov is a self-appointed tax collector. He's not collecting really with governmental authority. The Kosu B'Toisvis, the Dafke B'Malchi Yevdi Kechovim Omar De Dino De Malchuso Dino. It's only with regard to Gentile governments that we say, that we apply this principle. Because the land belongs to that Gentile authority. And he can tell them, if you don't follow my instructions, I will I will exile you. I will cast you out of the land. I will chase you out of the land. Avol b'malchei Yisrael loy. When it comes to a Jewish monarchy, a Jewish government, this concept of dino de malchusa does not apply. Lefish Eretz Yisrael, kol Yisrael shutfin ba. With regard to Eretz Yisrael, all Jews are partners in it. The basis, according to the thesis of Dina de Machsudina, is the ultimate power that the Gentile authority has to chase out the inhabitants. Not so with regard to the land of Israel. There is no authority that has the right to chase Jews out of their own land. So, being that that explanation is absent, so the concept of Dino de Malchusa does not apply. There's much more. This is a very broad topic, but in the context of Gemara markings, Daf Yomi, we must continue with the Gemara. Shehen Shel Beis HaMelech. The Mishnah gave an example of a vow, saying that the vow resulting in the aggressor thinking that the item he wants to steal belongs to the king. Even though in reality they are not the king's property. Hechi nodar. Practically speaking, how is the neder made that we are saying that the neder doesn't get off the ground? What happened? Omar of Amram Omarav Bioimer Yesru Peros Ha'olam Olai Im Einon Shel Beis HaMelech. He says that let the fruits of the world be prohibited to me if these fruits do not belong to the king. The Gemara asks, Kevan D'Omar Yesru, once he says that neder, once he declares forbidden all the fruits of the world, Itzru Alei Kol Peri Alma, the neder takes hold. How can the Mishnah say that such a neder is not binding when the language of the neder indicates a full-fledged neder, a full-fledged vow? The Rashi adds on the upper part of the narrow lines, Kevan d'Omar ye'asru, v'lo omar milsu d'haroma, and he didn't add anything to the vow that indicates some type of trickery. Well, then we go with what we hear. We hear a full-fledged vow, and therefore it's rulei. The fruits of the world should be also to him. The Gemara responds, Bi'oimer Hayom. The lettering that you see here are really stages in trying to figure out Hechi Nodar. So we try Rav Amram's approach, but it runs into trouble because it sounds like a full-fledged neder. So the Gemara responds, he says, what the vow is saying is really Yesru Peros Olam Olai Hayom. Let the fruits of the world be ushered to me today, he says explicitly to the aggressor, if the items are not of the king. The Gemara says, well, Idomar Hayom Lo Mekabel Mine Moiches. If that's the vow, that's not going to deter the Moches. The Moches isn't going to be convinced by that. Sure, a person is willing to have something prohibited him for the balance of the day, for today. And therefore, it's not convincing. The Moches will figure like this. He'll figure, yeah, sure, these fruits are, they're not really the Beis HaMelech. They don't really belong to the Melech. And the fellow is saying, let the fruits of the world be also to me for one day, if they're not the king's. So, what pain is the victim going to experience with a vow like that? So hence, the Moches will conclude that it's not a serious vow. The Gemara responds, Bi'oimer b'liboi hayom, u'mosi b'sfos of stam. The victim is saying, let the fruits of the world be usher be forbidden to me if what you're trying to take is not the king's. And as he's speaking, he's thinking, yeah, let the fruits be also today. Umotzi b'sfasav stam. As the Mora says, he says the vow without indicating, without stating explicitly the word hayom. V'afal gav d'sviralon, even though we hold as a principle dvarim shebelev einon dvarim, issues or mere thoughts, items that are thought, non-verbalized, non-expressed. That's dvarim shebelev. Einon dvarim, they have no consequence. They're inconsequential. Legabi oins and shiny, when it comes to extenuating circumstances like this, so we do reckon with the stipulation, the limitation of the vow that he is thinking. Therefore, the fruits, we can say the fruits will be ushered to the speaker for that day alone, as his thought out vow was. In the meantime, the aggressor is hearing that this person is subjecting himself to a real setback if, in fact, they are personal property. And therefore, he will believe that the fruits, the aggressor will believe that the fruits belong to the Beis HaMelech, the king's property, and therefore he will desist from his attempts to make off with the goods. As the Gemara continues, you see a long quote from the Mishnah, and we have a frame around it. This is all a Dibur HaMaschil. Beisham Ayomrim Bakol V'chulei, Beisham Ayomrim Bameshu Madiro, Beisil Omrim Af Beshenu Madiro. Ketzad, Omar Lo, Emor Koinim Ishti Nenisli, V'omar Koinim Ishti Ubonai Nenimli. Beisham Ayomrim Ishto Muteres Ubonav Asurim, Ubeisil Omrim Elu V'elu Mutoren. Omar Rav Huna. Before we continue further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Machlokes Beis Hillel Beis Shammai B'inyin Shimush B'Shvua Mul HaMoiches. A Machlokes, as we saw in the Mishnah, a Machlokes between Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, can a person, in order to deter the Moiches, use a Shvua, an oath, in order to accomplish that ends. So Rav Huna says, Tana, we have a brisa. Beishamai omrim lo yiftach loy b'shvua. Ubeishilo omrim af yiftach loy b'shvua. Beishamai says that you shall not initiate a shvua to the aggressor. The Rashi explains a little bit more. He says, "Lo yiftach lo b'shvua." Rashi about halfway down, "Shelo yoimar lo." The victim should not say, "Im tirtze, ashave loch." If you want, so I will offer you. I will swear to you concerning the produce. So you don't volunteer a shvua. And Beis Hillel says you can volunteer a shvua. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice we have a long question here. Lebeis Shammai, b'shvuahu d'lo yiftach, ha b'neder yiftach. Shall we infer thusly that the only objection Beis Shammai has is not to volunteer a shvua, but you can volunteer making a vow, a neder, in order to deter the aggressor. But is that really so? V'hotnan, did we not learn in the Mishnah Beis Shammai lo yiftach lo b'neder? You're not allowed to initiate, to volunteer the vow, only if the aggressor insists on your taking a vow. We explained earlier the idea that there's a hierarchy in terms of seriousness regarding the different types of oaths, vows and oaths. A neder is less severe than a shvua. We find, though, in the Mishnah that Beis Shammai objects even to your volunteering a neder. So that which we infer from the Braisa is contradicted by the Mishnah. And further, you can see we have a number two, a second question. Miftach u delo yiftach lo b'shvua, as the Brisa said, is all that is objected to merely volunteering a shvua? Ha meidar nodar b'shvua? But if the bandit, if the aggressor insists on your taking a shvua, that would be allowed according to Beis Shammai. That's what's implied. But that too is objected to from the Mishnah of Atanan Beis Shammai, Omrim Bakol Noidrim Chutz Mi Bishvua. Then any form of vow that the aggressor insists you can make, with the exception of a Shvua. So that the objection is not merely volunteering a Shvua, but any even responding with a Shvua upon his insistence is not allowed. On the side, we have a structural note. The triangles that you see represent Shtei Tshuvos Liyashiv Astir Bei Mishnosenu, the Diyukim Shemedaikim Mibraisu Shevi Rav Huna. Two approaches to resolve the Mishnah with the inferences we made from the Braisa that Rav Huna quoted. So the first approach, Tana Masnisin Beneder, the Mishnah teaches the objection to volunteering a mere neder, lahodiach hakeichan de Beis Shammai, to show us how far Beis Shammai goes in his objection to volunteering, to initiating these vows and oaths. How far does he go that even a neder you're not to volunteer? So that's why the Mishnah featured Beis Shammai and the neder, but not for the purpose of drawing the inference that we saw above, that you shouldn't volunteer a neder, as we saw in the Braisa where Beis Shammai objected to volunteering a shvua. That is not to be understood as grounds for inferring that you can volunteer a neder. Therefore, the Mishnah taught Beis Shammai with regard to don't volunteer a neder to show us how far he goes, that even a neder you're not allowed to volunteer. Tana Braisa, the Braisa that Rav Huna quoted, b'shvua, it featured shvuas, not to focus on Beis Shammai, but rather l'hodiach ha'koychan de Beis Hillel, to show us how far Beis Hillel goes to the other extreme, that you're allowed to even volunteer a shvua, the most serious of these oaths. Rav Ashi Omar, a second approach, hachi kotoni, the braisa that said lo yiftach lo b'shvua is not talking about Oinsin, is not talking about forced aggressors that work in extenuating circumstances beyond your control. Not at all. The Braisa is referring to a different topic, namely the topic of a sage absolving one of his vows. And we are to understand the Braisa as follows. Beis Shammai Omrim, Ein She'elo b'shvua. If a person had taken an oath, the result of which he found himself to be restricted, Beis Shammai says, too bad, you cannot have an oath absolved. And that's what was meant by the expression lo yiftach. That means the chacham, the sage, shall not prompt a person to regret a shvua that he made. Ubeis Hillel omrim yesh she'ela b'shvua, and Beis Hillel disagrees and is more lenient and says that even an oath, with all of its seriousness, is something that can be absolved. So just to reiterate, the expression lo yiftach is an instruction to the sage. And now the Mishnah. Note that this Mishnah is broken down, you can see this through our numbering system, to two general examples, two general categories, and within each category you'll find Aleph and Beis, two examples. The person vows and says, Hare netios elu korban im einon niktsotsos. Netios are saplings. He's declaring the saplings as sanctified. Korban, Rashi says, klomashiu hektish, if they are not cut. Now Rashi adds, based on the Gemara, he is saying that I declare these saplings kodesh, sanctified, if they don't get cut down today. And the day passes, and they were not cut down. Likewise, the next example, a person says, Talizu korban im eino nisrefes. The garment, he declares as sanctified, if it doesn't get burnt. And it didn't get burnt, so it would appear then that it's kodesh. And the Mishnah says, yesh lahen pidyon, they can be redeemed. Sanctified items, we'll get into more details we go through the Gemara, but in general, when you sanctify an item to the Beis HaMikdash, the item can be redeemed, and the money value of that sanctified item then gains the sanctity, and that's given to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Holy Temple, and the item is now yours for personal benefit. The Mishnah goes on, Harei netios ha'elu korban ad shiyiktzitzu. He declares the saplings sanctified until they are cut. Talazu korban ad shiyiktzitzu. He declares the garment sanctified until it gets burnt. The Mishnah continues at the top of Omid Beis, Ein lohem pidyon. Rashi at the top line adds, Ein lohem pidyon li'oilom kozman shelo niktzitzu. As long as the saplings have not been cut, they cannot be redeemed. The redemption will be of no value. Vein yoytzin l'chulin, and they will not become common or mundane. Elo kedushas hein, shehein kedushas aguf l'oilom. They remain sanctified like items that have intrinsic sanctity. That's kedushas aguf. It's a higher level of sanctity that doesn't is not subject to redemption. V'einlem takonoi lomis, and there's no solution, there's no freeing of them. Shafilu podon, even if you attempt to redeem them, chozers kedushas, they regain their sanctity automatically. The kevan d'omar atshiksetzu, since you declared the sanctity upon them until they get cut down, ein lahem pidyon le'olam kozman shelenitzetzu. They have no redemption as long as they have not been cut. Mashma de'li'olam yukorban atshiksetzu, which implies that they remain permanently sanctified until they are cut. Regarding the Reisha, the Gemara opens up with a question. In the Reisha, we saw a man declaring the Netios to be sanctified if they don't get cut down. And the day went by, they didn't get cut down, so they remain sanctified. However, they can be redeemed. That was Yesh Lahem Pidyon. The Gemara asks, V'lisni kedushos ve'enon v'en kedushos? This question, as it's phrased by the Gemara, you should know, is subject to textual, we'll say, controversy. There are some that don't want to include in the text V'ein Kedushos. However, we're going to go with the Rashi point here. The language of the Mishnah could have been, instead of saying they can be redeemed, it could have been an expression, Kedushas Vein Kedushas. Now, that dual expression would convey the following idea, that sanctity sets upon them. However, Ein Kedushas means they are subject to redemption. They're eligible for redemption. In other words, the sanctity can be removed through redemption. So why did the Mishnah choose the expression Yesh Lahen Pidyon? The Gemara answers, that, in fact, it could have said Kedushas Vein Kedushas, but Aidi Deboi Lemisna Seifa, since the Mishnah had an agenda, it wanted to teach the Seifa, Ein Lohem Pidyon, there is no redemption in the Seifa, in the second case of the Mishnah. So in contrast, Tonanami Reisha, Yesh Lohem Pidyon. In the Reisha, the Mishnah taught about something that can be redeemed. The Gemara now asks regarding the Reisha Hechi Nodar. What was the text of the Neder? What was the text of the vow? And of course, we already revealed it because of our reference to Rashi when we learned the Mishnah. But here we play along with the Gemara. What is the text of the vow in the Reisha? Omra Meimar Bioimer. He says, I'm sanctifying these plants im einon niktsosos hayom. If they don't get cut down today, so they are to be sanctified. V'over hayom v'lo niktsitsu. And the day went by and they didn't get cut down. The Gemara asks, if that's the case, im kein lomo lila meimar pshita. What does the Mishnah have to tell me something that the sanctity sets upon them when it's so obvious? After all, the day went by and they didn't get cut down. That's exactly what he stipulated in his vow. Lo, tzricha, kegon de'iko ziko nefisha. The circumstances involve saplings on a day where there is a very strong wind. And the vower thought that there's no way that these saplings are going to last till tomorrow. So he, in his heart of hearts, he really, if you make this assumption, that as a result of the strong wind blowing, he had no intention for them to become sanctified, because as he stipulated that they would be sanctified if they don't get cut down today. But in his eyes, it's obvious that they're going to get cut down today and no sanctity will set upon them. So the Mishnah tells us a chiddush, that even though the vow was taken under those circumstances, the vow nevertheless does take hold. Even though one might think that he had no serious intentions for the vow. The Gemara asks, V'hokotoni lo gabi talis. The netios taught in the Mishnah taught along with another example, the garment. The talis l'sreifa kaima is a talis, something destined to be burnt. The Gemara says, the talis is destined to be burnt in a parallel situation to the netios. Kigondiko dleka, the garment is in the vicinity of a blaze, and the vower is thinking there's no way that this talis is going to make it till tomorrow. So too with the netios, it is those circumstances, a very strong wind. The salka daitoch, the masik adaite delo misnatzlon, umishim hachi konodar, and it occurs to the owner that these items, the netios and the garment, the talus, are not going to last. And when he said they will be sanctified if they make it till tomorrow, he's not seriously considering that possibility, and therefore the sanctity isn't one of real intent. Komash malon, that as after all is said and done, all of this would fall into the category of dvarim shebelev, mere internal thoughts, and as stated, the vow takes hold by the mere fact that they actually survived the strong winds or the blaze. Hare netios ha'elu korban ad shi'iksetsu. The Mishnah said, ein lohem pinyon. The Gemara's uli oilom, is that permanent? It said, ein lohem pinyon, they have no redemption. That implies that there's no redemption even after they're cut down. Once again, he said, I declare these netios a korban. I declare them sanctified until they get cut down. And the Mishnah went on to say they have no redemption. Does that mean that even after they're cut down, there's no redemption? Well, as we go on in the Gemara, we're highlighting two key names with a diamond. And on the side, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. And also, take note that this is the beginning of a long topic, Til Daf Lamed, Omen Aleph, a Machlokis Bar Pada and Ula, the Inyan Pidyon Kodesh, regarding the redemption of items that had been sanctified. Aleinu lahasbir, it's our obligation to explain Hodikotoni Natius Elu Korbanachi Tzuenlin Pidyon regarding this topic of the Natios declared sanctified until they're cut, and the Mishnah rule they have no redemption. The Alpon of Nishma Shein Lahem Pidyon Lolam, it seems that they have no redemption forever. So what are we to make of this? Omar Barpada explains regarding these netios, Podon Choizros Ukedushos, Podon Choizros Ukedushos Ad Shiktsitsu. When the Mishnah implies that they have no redemption, well, that means that if you try to redeem them while they are still attached, they immediately regain their sanctity, so that the pidyon was of no benefit. That is true as long as the plants have not been detached. Nixitzu, once they are cut, podon pam achas vidayo, then he needs to redeem them once, and that's enough. We look in the Rosh, the lower part of the Rosh commentary, Nixitzu podon pam achas vidayo, v'shuv einon choizrus lios kedushos. They don't regain their sanctity, the sanctity is not resuscitated. The whole ad shiktsitzu koma, he said that the sanctity is upon these until they get cut. Umiu pam echot tzorch luvdoison. However, it is necessary for him to redeem them after they're cut. The kedusha b'chdi lo poka, sanctity does not depart. B'chdi means with nothing or for naught or for free. So, therefore, since Kedusha doesn't depart for free, you have to redeem them. You have to offer money in their stead, and that would be given to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara continues, V'ula Omar, Kevon Shenikzitzu Shuv, Ein Podon. Those saplings that he declared holy until they get cut, once they get cut, you don't have to redeem at all, because in his original declaration he said their sanctity is until they get cut. Well, once they get cut, the Kedusha departs. So Ula is of the opinion that Kedusha can depart, Bichdi can depart with nothing else. As we indicated, this sukkah is long. It continues till Daf Lamet, so in the context of a Daf Yomi Shir, as is our Gemara markings Daf Yomi, we'll have to pause here. Amir Tzashem, next time we'll get back into the sugya by making reference to the Shitas Bar Pada and Ula. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.